Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, December 24th, 2025. We begin our reading today on the front page above the fold, PBL seeks dismissal of various liability claims. Respondeat Superior claims alleged in suits against school district focus of recent motion. Paxton. An attorney for the Paxton-Buckley-Lota School District has filed a motion to dismiss claims that the district should be held liable for the alleged sexual misconduct of suspended teacher and former coach Rob Pacey. Michael Bersani, an Itzhaka attorney defending the district in court in lawsuits filed in Ford County Circuit Court by five current or former students, filed the motions to dismiss on Friday, December 12th. The deadline to file a response to the suits. 2 days earlier, Pacey's attorney, Emily Schmidt of Chicago, requested and was granted an extension until Friday, January 9th, to file Pacey's own response. McLean County Judge Rebecca Foley, who was providing over the civil cases, set the next hearing for 9:30 a.m. Friday, January 16th, via Zoom. The lawsuits, which were filed last summer and have since been consolidated into one case, allege that Pacey, a teacher and one-time coach in the PBL district, inappropriately touched female students during the course of his 17 years of employment, and that administrators failed to properly investigate and address students' claims of misconduct, ignoring the district's own policies by never notifying the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services as required. Pacey was suspended last spring from his position as a STEM and technology teacher at Clara Peterson Elementary Schools. In the lawsuits filed by Chicago attorney Bhavani Ravidran, the plaintiffs contend that PBL and three current and former administrators named as defendants, PBL Junior High School Principal Josh Didier and former superintendents Travis Dooley and Cliff McClure, should be held liable vicariously for Pacey's alleged sexual misconduct. Bersani disagreed, though, arguing that the legal theory of respondeat superior, which holds that employers can be liable for their employees' actions while acting within the scope of their employment, should not apply to the district in this case. Under Illinois law, an employee's sexual acts or misconduct are per se unrelated to his employer's business and therefore not within the scope of employment, Bersani's motion noted. A supporting memorandum attached to Bersani's motion elaborated, citing previous case law. Under Illinois law, an employer is not vicariously liable for an employee's willful and wanton, intentional, or criminal acts if those acts occur outside the scope of employment, the memorandum said. The sexual misconduct of an employee serves only the employee's personal benefit or gain, and therefore is not and cannot be connected to his employment. The respondeat superior claim brought against PBL is based entirely on allegations that Pacey committed sexual battery, assault, harassment, and grooming. If true, this is exactly the kind of conduct that is taken specifically for an employee's own purient interest and not for the benefit of his employer's interests. Therefore, PBL is not liable under respondeat superior for the alleged sexual misconduct of Robert Pacey as a matter of law. While Bersani's motion seeks the dismissal of the respondeat superior claims made against PBL, it does not apply to claims made specifically against Dooley, McClure, or Didier, which were answered in a separate December 12th filing, the motion noted. The filing, an answer, and affirmative defenses to the complaint at law provided the three administrators and district's responses to the allegations against them, saying they are not liable for plaintiff's injuries caused by their adoption, failure to adopt, or failure to enforce any law, including but not limited to district policies, under the Illinois Tort Immunity Act. The filing also noted that, to the extent that plaintiff's claims are premised on alleged events that occurred more than 1 year prior to the filing of those claims, they are time-barred pursuant to state law. In the filing, the district and administrators denied most of the allegations against them or said they lacked sufficient knowledge or information to form a belief as to the truth of the allegations. In all cases, they denied their actions were willful and wanton, as alleged. Defendants admit that there were no reports to DCFS because none were required or warranted in the judgment and discretion of the administrators within district policies and training, filing noted. Meanwhile, Pacey has not been criminally charged and has denied any wrongdoing. Defendant Pacey continues to diligently investigate the allegations contained in the complaint, as well as determining the appropriate response to the claims asserted, Schmidt said in her motion, seeking an extension of the response deadline for Pacey. Then, in the case against former Gibson City Melvin Sibley teacher and coach, judge recommends appropriate sentence amid plea deal talks. Following Rule 402D conference, pretrial hearing set for 2:30 p.m., January 14th. Pontiac. After meeting with attorneys to discuss a plea agreement, a Livingston County judge made a recommendation Wednesday for an appropriate sentence for Robert L. Dinkins, a former Gibson City Melvin Sibley coach and teacher, charged with 6 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse for alleged activities with a high school student. According to online Ford County Circuit Court records, Judge Mary Cole made the preliminary recommendation after hearing from Special Prosecutor Kate Kurtz and Dinkins' 2 Springfield attorneys, Mark Wyckoff Sr. and Daniel Fultz, during a so-called Rule 402D conference held via Zoom from Cole's Livingston County Chambers. Cole set a pretrial hearing for 2:30 p.m. Wednesday, January 14th via Zoom. Dinkins will be notified to appear at the hearing remotely from the Ford County Jail, where he remains detained. Cole was reassigned the case in June after the 39-year-old Dinkins, a Gibson City resident, was arrested and charged in Ford County Circuit Court. Gibson City Police Chief Adam Rosendahl said an investigation revealed there was data to support Mr. Dinkins having participated in sexual activities with a high school age student. Rosendahl said police executed a search warrant at Dinkins' residence, where they seized his phone and other electronics for forensic analysis. Dinkins, a 13-year employee of the GCMS school district, was fired in April from his position as 8th-grade math teacher and coach of the 8th-grade boys basketball and boys track teams and GCMS Fisher varsity soccer team. Dinkins previously served as an assistant coach for the high school boys basketball team. Prior to working at GCMS, Dinkins was an 8th-grade student teacher at Wilmington Middle School in fall of 2011 and worked in a 6th-grade teaching practicum in Franklin Middle School in the fall of 2010 and an 8th-grade practicum at Cumberland Middle School in 2011. And continuing with court news, Ford County Circuit Court, woman, 58, gets 11-year term for meth delivery. A Roberts woman has been sentenced to 11 years in state prison for her role in what police called a major drug distribution ring in Gibson City and surrounding towns. Angela K. Rutledge, 58, formerly of Hoopston, was among 4 people arrested on felony methamphetamine charges last February following a controlled buy of about 1/4 pound of the drug at Gibson City's North Park. Authorities later searched residences on North State Street and West 9th Street in Gibson City and a residence in Lota, seizing about half a pound of methamphetamine as a result of the investigation. Judge Matt Fitton sentenced Rutledge on Tuesday, December 9th in Ford County Circuit Court. Rutledge pleaded guilty to one Class X felony count of methamphetamine delivery of 15 to 100 grams on July 14th, the day she was to stand trial. In exchange, state's attorney Andrew Killian agreed to dismiss an additional Class X felony count filed against her and to recommend a sentence of no more than 12 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections with day-for-day credit to apply. In imposing a sentence of 11 years against Ms. Rutledge, the court was sending a strong message to those that traffic the poison that is methamphetamine in our communities that, when caught, they will be held accountable, Killian said in an emailed statement. The court also recognized that Ms. Rutledge was engaging in this conduct at the North Park in Gibson City at a time when, according to testimony provided by Officer Austin Rosenbaum of the Gibson City Police Department during the sentencing hearing, children and families were present. Involved in the drug trafficking investigation were the Livingston County Sheriff's Office Proactive Unit, Ford County Sheriff's Office, and Gibson City, Paxton, and Fairbury Police Department. The joint nature of this operation demonstrates the recognition by law enforcement agencies that methamphetamine and the troubles it brings to communities does not stay local, Killian said. And in working together and sharing resources, agencies are able to amplify results to target dealers. Rutledge remained in custody at the Ford County Jail in Paxton as of Wednesday, December 17th, awaiting transfer to prison. Besides Rutledge, also charged were Alan E. Burgeon, 64, of Lota and Urbana, who faces three Class X felony counts of methamphetamine delivery and has a jury trial set for Tuesday, January 20th, and Kenneth C. Coldvite, 54, of Gibson City, who faces two Class II felony counts of methamphetamine delivery and is due back in court on Monday, February 9th, amid ongoing plea negotiations. A fourth person, Tara L. Call, 46, of Gibson City, was arrested for possession of less than 5 grams of methamphetamine and possession of drug paraphernalia, a Class A misdemeanor, but was not charged according to online court records. And from the Iroquois County Court, teen pleads guilty to aggravated battery, sentenced to probation. Onarga. A 19-year-old from Onarga pleaded guilty to aggravated battery on Wednesday, December 17th, 5 months after he was arrested for attacking a paramedic. Previously, WCIA reported that Iroquois deputies were requested by paramedics in Onarga on July 11th. Once on the scene, deputies learned that Joseph Burke had attacked a paramedic while they were assisting someone else. He was charged with 3 counts of aggravated battery. In October, Burke pleaded not guilty and requested a jury trial, but just 2 months later, he agreed to a plea deal. Burke appeared in court on December 17th and agreed to withdraw his prior plea of not guilty. He pleaded guilty to one count of aggravated battery, and the other 2 counts were dropped. Court records indicate that Burke was sentenced to 2 years of probation with conditions. The conditions of his probation are as follows. He must not violate any law anywhere while on probation. He must report to the probation department and comply with its rules. He must not own or possess a firearm or deadly weapon while on probation. He must not leave the state without prior permission of the court or the probation department. He must permit the probation department to visit his home or elsewhere while on probation. And he must submit to drug testing and not to test positive. Burke's case was continued to March 2nd to set up a payment plan. And we'll turn back to the front page for a new story from the Ford County Board. Board to vote for second time on county budget. This time, the budget that was on public display will be considered. Paxton. As it turns out, the budget approved by the Ford County Board for the 2025-26 fiscal year that began December 1st is not the same one earlier placed on public display, meaning the board will need to approve it again, this time the correct one. Chairman Chase McCall of Gibson City explained the situation in an email this week to other county board members who subsequently shared it with the Ford County Chronicle. In his email, McCall said, quote, a couple of department heads reached out to him after the board's approval of the budget during a November 26 special meeting. According to McCall, they said some of their line items in the approved budget were not the same as those listed in the budget that was approved for placement on public display at the board's November 10th meeting. Upon further investigation, it was discovered that a total of 17 line items were inaccurate in the budget passed on November 26th, McCall said in his email, which listed each line item and their correct amounts, totaling about $1.41 million. State's Attorney Andrew Killian was consulted for legal guidance. Upon his review of the situation, the budget presented at the November 26, 2025 meeting was not the budget that was approved to be laid at the November 10th, 2025 meeting, thereby voiding the budget passed on November 26. Technically, the budget that was approved to lay continues to do so until adopted. McCall said the agenda for the board's January 12th meeting will include a separate section listed immediately after comments from the floor to consider approval of the correct budget. It's going to be the correct budget, the same budget that was laid on November 10th, McCall said in a follow-up interview. McCall said the correct budget shows $5,939,495 projected in both revenues and expenses in the general fund. Those numbers are up by $100,708 from the $5,838,786 listed in the version of the budget that was approved, he said. Still, the general fund's revenues and expenses should continue to balance. We continue to have a balanced budget, McCall said. That's important. McCall said steps will be taken in the next fiscal years to prevent the issue from recurring. As far as the process moving forward, we're just going to have to take a review of how we go about our budget, just to ensure that the right one is reflected and is in front of us when we're taking action, McCall said. Because, as you know, during the budget process, I don't know how many draft budgets we have on the table, and we're changing numbers as we go. So again, it was a clerical oversight on our part. We apologize. We've got to do better than that. We will do a better job of keeping our ducks in a row for the next budget cycle. And again, on the front page, from the Fraternal Order of Police, Illini Lodge 17, in the spirit of giving. Local law enforcement agencies distribute turkeys, food vouchers to families in need. Paxton. An annual tradition continued Monday as law enforcement officers in Ford County delivered turkeys and meal vouchers to local families in need, ensuring their Christmas would include a full dinner. As part of the holiday food basket program organized each year by the Fraternal Order of Police, Illini Lodge 17, the Ford County Sheriff's Office and Paxton Police Department each delivered about 20 turkeys weighing 20 to 25 pounds apiece, plus 20 meal vouchers to County Market, valued at $75 each, to families in Ford County, including in Paxton and Roberts, and those in Buckley and Loda in neighboring Iroquois County, as well, according to the Paxton Police Department's School Resource Officer, Brandon Ryan. Gibson Police Chief Adam Rosendahl said an additional 10 to 12 turkeys were distributed to families in his city, too. We just try to help out the community and help out the families that might be in need in town, Ryan said Monday as he was about midway through delivering meal vouchers and turkeys to families in Paxton. I don't think they're expecting it. They seem pretty grateful and pretty appreciative. Families receiving the turkeys and meal vouchers are selected each year with the help of school guidance counselors, Ryan said. I try to coordinate with the Paxton Buckley Lotus School District to determine families that might be in need of something like this for a voucher and a turkey, just to help out around Christmas, Ryan said. The turkeys were donated by Meats Plus in rural Lota, while the county market meal vouchers were paid for by the Fraternal Order of Police's Illini Lodge 17. Other law enforcement agencies in neighboring Champaign County that are part of Illini Lodge 17 are also handing out meals, Ryan said. Pretty much every agency in the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge, I think, tries to do it, he said. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, December 24th. Jill K. Berkowitz, Pawnee. A celebration of life for Jill Karen Utterback Berkowitz, 52, of Pawnee, will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, January 17, 2026, immediately followed by a service at the Pawnee Methodist Church in Pawnee. After the services, there will be a luncheon at the church around noon. In place of flowers, family requests that donations be made to the Pawnee Food Pantry, located at 704 7th Street in Pawnee. 40 Sue Combs, Paxton. 40 Sue Combs, 85, of Paxton, died at 9:18 p.m. Monday, December 15th at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton. Funeral services were held Saturday, December 20th at the Bayer Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend Dave Hohelin officiating. Burial followed in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. William A. Dreyer, Cisna Park. William Albert Bill Dreyer, 89, of Cisna Park, died Wednesday, December 17th at his home. Funeral services were held Saturday, December 20th at the Apostolic Christian Church in Cisna Park, with ministers of the church officiating. Burial followed at the Apostolic Christian Cemetery with military graveside rites by the Cisna Park American Legion Post 527. Memorials may be made to the Apostolic Christian Church Benevolent Fund or the Iroquois Memorial Hospice. Timothy J. Gardner, Gibson City. Timothy J. Gardner, 70, of Gibson City, died in the afternoon of Monday, December 15th, surrounded by his family. Funeral Mass was held Tuesday, December 23rd at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Gibson City. Burial followed in Drummond Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to Iroquois Memorial Hospice or the Gibson Area Food Pantry. Stephen A. Gibson, Onarga. Stephen Albert Steve Gibson, 74, of Naperville, formerly of Onarga, died Monday, December 15th at his home in the company of his wife and daughters after a battle with a rare blood cancer, myelofibrosis. Funeral Mass was held Tuesday, December 23rd at the Immaculate Conception Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church in Gilman, with the Reverend Father Santiago Corona officiating. Burial was in the Onarga Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Onarga Historical Society. Younger friends and family members are encouraged to donate blood in his honor. Melody Ann Haas, Gilman. Melody Ann Haas, 62, a native of Gilman, died Monday, December 15th, following a long illness. Funeral services were held Saturday, December 20th at the Knapp Fredenius Funeral Home in Gilman. Memorial contributions may be made to CATSNAP, and that's at 1713 State Street, Suite 104, Champaign, 61820. Frida Marie Hyde, Paxton. Frida Marie Hyde, 90, of Tuscola, formerly of Paxton, died Thursday, December 18th at her home. Funeral services were held Monday, December 22nd at the Bear Family Funeral Service in Paxton with the Reverend Pat Allen officiating. Burial followed in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to the Paxton First United Methodist Church or to an organization of the donor's choice. Karen Schmidt, Piper City. Sharon Myers Schmidt, 83, of Oklahoma, formerly of Piper City, died Saturday, December 13th. Funeral services were held Friday, December 19th, at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Piper City, with the Reverend Santiago Corona officiating. Burial was in the Brenton Township Cemetery near Piper City. We return to the news with a story from the Paxton Park District's Board of Commissioners. Park District to search for new rec director. The Paxton Park District is still seeking a recreation director. During its monthly meeting on Wednesday, December 17th, the district's Board of Commissioners voted 4-0 to move forward with posting the position on Indeed. Jordan Chapman resigned as the district's full-time recreation director in October, but is serving as acting director through Tuesday, January 13th, or until a new director is hired, whichever comes first. The board's next meeting is also on January 13th. Board members said they may want to consider extending Chapman's time as acting director. "We have to move forward with something," said the board's Vice President Craig Keefe. In November, Keefe presented a proposal to make a change from having one full-time recreation director to having a committee made up of 5 part-time coordinators, each specializing in a core function of the park district. Commissioner Mark Fredrickson said Wednesday, though, that going with one director is going to be something that is more readily accessible to the public to know what is going on and to have one point of contact. I like the idea of having 5 part-time positions, but I think we're going to get a lot of pushback from the public if that's the way we choose to go," Fredrickson said. "It's not going to be as clear-cut. We're going to have people asking why they need to go to this person for one thing and that person for another thing. I think I'd be more apt at this time to move forward with the director posting," President Matt Quinlan added. The board acknowledged a letter sent from Paxton resident Donna Pepper that same day. The previous week, Pepper emailed the board with concerns regarding the recent state of the park district. Pepper stated in her letter that with recurring personnel and financial issues, "I do think it's time to seek outside expert assistance. Before hiring anyone in the new director role or before changing the structure of the director position to a proposed 5 part-time coordinators, I would like to ask the board to strongly consider hiring a consultant expert in the field of parks and recreations," Pepper wrote. "Expert direction should be sought in the near future to direct things that can ultimately make less work for volunteer board members and paid staff, as well as other volunteers and participants, and to make the district run more smoothly." And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott, and on behalf of myself and all of us here at the Illinois Radio Reader, we wish you a very happy and prosperous new year.